Coming up on golf today, a couple of nice wins over the weekend in golf. PGA Tour victory number 2 for Seamus Power in Bermuda. DP World Tour win number 2 for Jordan Smith in Portugal. We break it all down for you on this Monday. But what about the winners who didn't claim victory? Some gained some fans, made a move in the standings, earned some confidence and momentum, some of the intangibles and building blocks for the future. And on this Halloween, what were some of the most terrifying shots we witnessed in 2022? The truly frightening, the spooky, don't be scared. It's Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Second win on the PGA Tour for Seamus Power, and it came in his 138th start.
Yeah, final round of 70, good enough to get it done. His first win on tour since the 2021 Barbasol Championship, and after the win, he spoke with the media about the importance of this victory.
You know, the thing when you don't have the exemption is like every year is year to year and it's tough going, you know. So I said to be able to push that down an extra couple of years is fantastic. And, you know, going to be really able to focus on, you know, like, you know, just practicing and improving and just, you know, playing my own game and not really worrying about all that stuff. And I noticed that last season having the winner's exemption for whatever, I'm getting much, but 21, 22, I was really able to play it much more freely, like when you're up near the lead. And I think that's a nice thing to be able to do. That's obviously the goal to be doing anyway, but it's sometimes a little harder than normal. So it's going to be great. You know, it gets a lot of bonuses. I mean, one of my favorite memories in golf was like in Maui last year and be able to go back there again. And, you know, obviously, I mean, having the 3 year exemption is just fantastic. And it opens doors. I said, it gets higher in the world rankings. You know, all those kind of things are just, like, it's all positive. So it's, once it sinks in, I think some of the other stuff will kind of hit me like probably in the next few days. But for now, just over the moon, just delighted to be able to get the win.
Hard to win on the PGA Tour, Matt. We say it every week. The wind was up at Bermuda. What do you appreciate the most about Seamus Power and how he's able to hold off Ben Griffin, who seemed to be cruising, especially on that front nine?
Yeah, and Ben's an interesting story, too, which I think maybe we should get into in today's show in just a bit. But when you take a look at what Seamus Power did, this man from Waterford, Ireland, that may have crystallized his position into one of the best in the game. He's now ranked 32nd in the world after that win. But if you look at what he was doing through the heart of the summer when he was really playing some great golf, here you can see from the U.S. Open when he had tied for 12th, 18th tee Pebble Beach, kind of going backwards here, the PGA Championship, a tie for 9th. His major championships that he was in this year were the first time that he was in them, and he has a tie for 9th and a tie for 12th, which shows you that he was really starting to find his form. However, what was interesting, Damon, was what happened after that, right after that tie for 9th at the U.S. Open. Obviously, it's great to finish the year with a victory, but the middle stretch there, it wasn't looking like the same guy, which I want to get into in just 1 second. What was different about this past week? What changed? If you look at those 8 events from the U.S. Open, his average finish was 40th with 3 missed cuts in the middle of that. He went from a career high of being ranked 36th in the world after that U.S. Open tie for 9th, plummeted all the way down to 48th, which doesn't sound bad. In fact, he was the highest ranked player in the field this week, but it was a considerable drop from the path that he was on. So what we looked at was what was different about Seamus Powers. If you look at his body of work from this past year, he's 189th in strokes game approach to green, right? That's not even average. That's right on the bad side of the scale.
Yes.
This week, however, Seamus Powers was tied for 9th in the field in greens and regulation, hitting 75%. And what's really interesting about it, when you're talking about a guy from Ireland, is that you're dealing with those very severe winds. And what I think happens when you're dealing with severe winds is that if you have an excellent ball striker with irons, it takes away the advantage because the wind is blowing the ball around so much. Everyone's going to miss greens. A lot of the highlights that we showed you, he was getting up and down. That's also part of his game. In that area, he's ranked 24th in the world. He's 12th in putting. So everything seemed to align to be to his strengths in what he did this week at Bermuda. And ultimately, even though he was the highest ranked player coming into the week, he ended up number 1 for the week as well because of what changed.
There's a different kind of pressure also when you are expected to win, when you are the best player in that field. You think Jon Rahm, for example, in Mexico
or last season, or in Spain
or Rory
this
at the
year.
CJ Cup.
Rory,
yeah.
Patrick Cantlay has carried that as well. So you have that. He's the best player in the field. You mentioned where he comes from, Ireland. He's also, and you mentioned the majors, played in all four major championships last season and played well, as you pointed out, the T9, the T12. I think he's someone that's kind of coming into his own. He won in 2021. He won in 2022. He finished tied for third at the Sony Open in Hawaii, where the wind was also up in January. So I think you put together the quality of his golf this past year, the fact that he was the best player in the field, and he kind of showed to me that veteran moxie didn't really kind of break the fall of Ben Griffin as he was struggling. He kind of kept the pressure on, especially with that birdie at 14.
You know, great players seem to have the ability to adjust their game how and when and where they have to, whether they're talking about the course, whether you're talking about shots, or in this case, whether you're talking about conditions. He did all that. Yeah. He said later on that for him, he thought that it illustrated very much confidence, that it was the fact that he believes in himself now. So I look for some good things from him. He's 35 years old in 7 months. So he's at an age now where, remember back in the day when we used to say that as a player reached his middle 30s, he was kind of at the crescendo of his career?
Yeah.
Maybe a bit of a late bloomer, but it could be for him. This was a tweet from European Ryder Cup captain Luke Donald. Smith, Power, Dietrich, 1-1-2. Very happy with that. A good week for European golf at Ryder Cup Europe, said the captain. 3 from the Euro list, 3 from the World Point list, 6 will be captain's picks. Here's the way it looks right now. You can see the European points, Rahm, Lowry, McIlroy. Look at that name at number 4, and McIntyre. Keep that in your mind for a second, and there you see Jordan Smith at number 5. From the world points, you can see McIlroy, Rahm, Lowry, and McIntyre again. So the question is, Damon Hack, when we're looking at the European side, there were some announcements recently, namely with Sergio Garcia, that impacted the team.
Yes.
But there's reason to have a conversation about maybe some new players in the mix.
There's always new players in the mix for Europe. As much as we talk about the lions of the European Ryder Cup team historically, and Sergio Garcia has been one, and I do want to start there because there's questions about whether the weight of Rory McIlroy's voice would carry, let's start fresh, or the weight of Jon Rahm's voice would carry, we need Sergio. Well, Sergio answering the question, I knew some of the things that might happen if I joined LIV. But at the end of the day, as we're seeing, you can see some of the guys on the other side don't really want me there. I don't want to be a burden to anyone, even less in a Ryder Cup. I'd rather be away from that as much as it hurts and make sure that Europe has the best chance of winning than me being there and having some guys that are going to be upset with my presence. So without Sergio, you think about, well, who are some guys that have stepped up historically that you wouldn't have expected? Ross Fischer? Getting a couple points in 2010. How about 2014? Remember Victor Dubuisson getting 2.5 points? How about Jamie Donaldson? Yeah, wasn't on a team before 2014. Hasn't been on a team since. Gets the clinching point here, playing singles against Keegan Bradley. And this was just one of those players, unheralded, who answered the call in a big way. And I just think that time after time, especially in Wales, especially in Glen Eagles, the European team is able to find that unheralded person who's able to compile points that ultimately lead to the win.
Well, I'm not sure if some of the suggestions that I'll have relative to that, Damon, would be unheralded.
Okay.
But when you're talking about venues, it is distinctive because remember when I said to you guys to keep an eye on the name, it's Robert McIntyre. I said to him one time, why do you call you, everyone calls you Robert. He said, I'm just Bob. So just Bob won the Italian Open. Remember, he did it in a playoff over Matt Fitzpatrick. Yeah. In venue, Marco Simeone. It is the golf course that the Ryder Cup is going to be played on. Obviously, he's very much on Luke Donald's radar, and he got a strong endorsement as well from Rory McIlroy, who said that he fully expects him to be on the team. So I think that's a great, great player, a lefty, and a very powerful golfer at that. So I thought I would, for me, just put together a couple other names that I thought were interesting. How about the Højgaard brothers, Rasmus and Nikolai? They're both multiple-time winners on the DP World Tour right now. Identical twins. Here's the thing for me. If a guy that has to do radio from the Ryder Cup, if they pair them together, dress the exact same, I'm not sure how I'd know the difference.
As a father of multiples, I'm already a fan of the twins, obviously.
All right, I got a couple more for you to keep an eye on.
Okay.
Guido Migliozzi. Yeah. Yes, why not? He won the Kazoo Open in France earlier, so I think he's one that can make it. And if you're going to go down the road of the theme of Italians on the team while the Ryder Cup is in Italy, it's about 12 miles from downtown Rome. How about Francesco Molinari? I know it's not a new name. I know it's not a young guy, so I'm kind of violating the theme here of the young people. But how about if Frankie can get back on that team in Italy?
There will be some Italian presence on that team via captaincies, assistants, or via a player. And I will tell you this. When you look at the core, Rory, Rahm, Shane Lowry, Tommy Fleetwood, Matt Fitzpatrick, Victor Hovland, to me, it still looks very, very strong. The results in Wisconsin notwithstanding.
Surely will be very competitive. Still to come on Golf Today, they might not have gotten their hands on some of the hardware this weekend, but it wasn't a total loss. Damon and I will give our winners, who didn't win, right after this break.
Back on Golf Today, what a roller coaster week it was for PGA Tour rookie Ben Griffin at the Butterfield Bermuda Championship. Former mortgage loan officer not only played himself into the final group on Sunday, but fired a third round 66 to enter the final round with a share of the lead. You're thinking, Ben Griffin, who is this guy? 26 years of age, earned the card via the Korn Ferry Tour, had given up the game, couple top five finishes, and 8 career PGA Tour starts, quit professional golf, like cold turkey, I'm done, working as a mortgage loan officer, twice an All-American at the University of North Carolina.
Let's take a look at his scorecard, and there you can see where the trouble set in, got a little bit shaky on 8, but then had birdies on 10 and 11, looked like he had kind of leveled things out. But no, ultimately it was a double bogey at 16. His fate was sealed, a plus 172 for Ben Griffin. And afterwards, he spoke to Karen Stupples, who started with the question that should be asked. How do you measure success in these situations?
You had some really awesome shots out there. Obviously not quite the finish that you probably would have liked. What did you take away from this experience this week?
Yeah, I mean, it was a very fun week. You know, I hate to finish the way I did this tournament, but, you know, it's tough down the stretch coming down the wire in a PGA Tour event. It's not very easy, especially for a guy who was in an office, you know, a year and 2 months ago. So just as I build more and more experience, I'm going to get more and more comfortable. You know, it was a bummer. I felt like I actually executed a few good shots down the stretch that didn't kind of work out how I wanted to with the wind. That's the way it goes. I got to be better with my misses. But, you know, I've been doing some good work, and I'm very optimistic about my future out here, and I know my time will come very soon.
When you were sitting in that office chair, was there ever a time that you didn't think you would ever be back out here again?
Yeah, I mean, there definitely was. You know, I said this yesterday, and there's so many really special people again that allow me to play golf, and you know, I don't know what I finished. I think I finished third, but you know, it's pretty unbelievable where I came from, and just to be able to play golf out here, play competitively against the best players in the world. You know, it's really fun, and I'm super, super optimistic about everything. And you know, it's a bummer that I didn't finish it off today, but I'm just happy to be out here playing golf, playing for a living, and have a really strong support system and family and girlfriend. So it's been great.
Well, I've enjoyed watching you. Many congratulations. It still was a great result. Look forward to watching you in the future. Thanks for your time.
Thanks a ton. Appreciate it.
Time now for this week's edition of Winners Who Didn't Win. And Ben did not win the trophy, but man, did he win a lot of fans for his composure. And you've spoken to the young man. What have you learned from your conversations with Ben?
I thought it was fascinating. I thought Karen did a great interview with Ben, and I loved his perspective on that, because when these things happen, obviously, players can measure themselves against what they did not accomplish. The fact that he had that run of bogeys and a double bogey on 16 that doomed him and set his fate. However, he didn't look at it that way. It wasn't about what I didn't do. It was about how close he came. So there was a number of different things in terms of quotes from Ben that I thought kind of revealed where he was coming from. First of all, this was a player that, as a young player, knew and felt success. In 2018, he won on the Canadian Tour. So he had this level of expectation of what he should be doing and what he was capable of that he wasn't meeting. And then ultimately, I asked him, but what was the breaking point? Why would you, if you had this opportunity to play the game professionally as a touring pro, and you can't, what was it? And he basically told me that he couldn't pay his rent. And he didn't have any place to go. He didn't want to ask his parents for money so that he could carry on in the world of golf. And then I asked him overall, I said, tell us about your pathway in the game of golf, both with what you went to when you stepped away from the game and came back to the game. And he said, quoting, he said, it's quite the unique path, but not necessarily the dream way of doing it. He said, because I couldn't afford rent, I stepped away. He said, I sold mortgages. When I quit, he said, I was actually burned out from the game. And then I asked him what his signs were. Why did you come back? What was it when you were sitting in that cubicle or that office selling mortgages? What was it that got you to say, you know what, I should be playing the game? Well, his grandfather passed away. And bear in mind, COVID had great impact on all of this as well in terms of how he was trying to navigate his way through the game. But his grandfather passed away. He loved the game of golf. And in his grandfather's obituary, it said, quoting, hit him long and straight. And he said that hit him. For some reason, that connected with him, that he needed to be back in the game of golf, that he needed to fulfill what might be his destiny to be a player on the PGA Tour, because he, in some sense, owing it to all the people that had loved him and supported him through all of this. And he said, I just needed a reset. I didn't think I was going to go back into golf. And it said, I couldn't have been luckier to be playing professional golf with all of the new changes in the game of golf that are going on right now. And so the last thing I asked him was, what's your message for people who are struggling with whatever they're struggling with in life, but they still harbor a dream? And he said, be positive, stay the course. Things are never easy. There's always going to be peaks and valleys. Create positive energy and be grateful.
Tell you what, that's beautiful reporting, by the way, Matt. In the largesse of these companies, he seemed so moved by that on Saturday, Sunday as well, never losing sight of the fact that a year ago in 2 months that he was in an office.
Yeah.
And he could look at the big picture and have perspective and say, I didn't win this golf tournament, but man, I will win. I'm going to be okay. I know what I need to do going forward. And sure, he had some bobbles yesterday trying to win for the first time on the PGA Tour. But the gratitude that he carries and the thankfulness that he carries, I mean, what a mighty 15th club for this young man.
No doubt about that. I still wonder if somewhere someone's going, hey, honey, is that the guy that sold us our mortgage?
It might be, right? Especially where the housing market was going the last couple of years. But, yeah, it was interesting to watch Ben play yesterday, especially early. I turned it on late last night and watched kind of a tape of the coverage and watching him make those birdies early.
Yeah.
He was walking so slow and looked so comfortable. He looked to me like a 10-year veteran out on the golf course. And then I noticed that later in the back nine, I thought his walk was just a little more hurried, a little more rushed. You know, you're taking drops and you're having to, you know, call an official over, and it just looked like that smooth, easy gait that he had on the front nine kind of disappeared in the throes of that back nine battle. He's not the first player to say, you know what, maybe things kind of sped up a little bit. At least to my eyes as a viewer, things sped up for Ben Griffin
I think that's a safe assumption to make. I mean, he did collapse.
Yeah.
There's no other way to put it. However, the fact that he went away from that and said, right in the wake of it, he was grateful, the word that you used, and he did as well. And the fact that he said he's going to learn from what he went through is what was so encouraging about it. I think it's really easy to be a fan.
Wonderful learning experience for Ben Griffin. Coming up after this short break, I'm going to say hello to our good friend from Golf Week. That's Beth Ann Nichols. Just two events left on the LPGA Tour schedule for the CME Group Tour Championship. Beth Ann will take us through some of her biggest storylines coming down this home stretch. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Golf Today. For the first time in her career, Mathia Thydikoun has reached number one in the Rolex Women's World Golf Rankings. As the latest rankings update is out, she's also the second player to reach the number one ranking in her LPGA Tour rookie year. Can you imagine that? After Sunyoon Park did it in November of 2017. She moved one spot on the Rolex rankings to world number one, passing Jin Young Ko, who has held that top spot since January 31st of 2022.
With more, let's welcome in our good friend, Golf Week senior writer, Beth Ann Nichols. Beth Ann, how about this news surrounding Mathia Thydikoun taking over the top spot in the world?
Well, I think we all expected her to have a big year, but I don't know that we expected it to be quite this big. You know, I was thinking more rookie of the year, but she actually has a chance to not only be the number one player in the world, which she now is, but also be the LPGA player of the year, which only two players in the history have ever done that, Nancy Lopez and Sungyoung Park. She currently trails by 21 points, Lydia Ko in that player of the year race. So, Ataya, when you look at her recent form, she finished in the top 10 in her last five starts, including a victory. She leads the tour in birdies. She, of course, has won twice this season. This is a player who became the youngest ever to win a professional event at age 14. She has a very Lydia Ko-like trajectory and dominated on the Ladies European Tour before she came here to the LPGA. So really excited to see what she can do down the road.
Well, Titikin is only the second player under 20 to reach number one at 19 years, 8 months, and 11 days, joining Lydia Ko. She was 17 years, 9 months, and 9 days when she first reached number one in the world in February of 2015. What's on the line for these two players? Does either one have, like, an inside track in your mind?
You know, honestly, I don't know that anyone has. Lydia is obviously coming off a win most recently, and that she just won in South Korea. She's not in the field this week in Japan, whereas Ataya is. You know, Ataya really downplayed being number one in the world when she was asked about it in South Korea very recently. She said she didn't care about it at all. Said she was more concerned with feeding her family, though she went on to say that her family's doing all right. So it's not like it's dire circumstances, but she was looking more at the big picture and you know, taking care of everyone who's gotten her to this point, I think is what she was getting at. But you know, it'll be interesting to see how she handles it. You know, it's a new kind of pressure, very different for her. Whereas for Lydia Ko, what's old is new again. So two very different paths. You know, you feel like Lydia's in a great place in her life, obviously going to get married later this year and really playing some incredibly consistent golf.
Let's talk about Lydia Ko a little bit more too, Beth Ann, if we can. Some interesting news was posted to her social media over the weekend, and she said that she and Sean Foley have parted ways. What can you tell us about this developing story?
I can tell you, first of all, that I was stunned. I did not see this coming. When you look at the fact that when Sean Foley and Lydia Ko got together during COVID in the summer of 2020, Lydia was ranked outside the top 50. Since she's been with him, her confidence has soared. She's, like I said earlier, playing some of the most consistent golf of her career. She won the Vera Trophy last year. She's looking good to win it again this year. And then, you know, you add to the fact that she could become the number one player in the world again for the first time since 2017. So, you know, Lydia is just on this incredible path. But apparently she and Sean Foley decided to part ways for logistical reasons. That's what she put in her post last month, so ahead of her title in South Korea. And she's been working with Ted Oh. Her sister Sura told me casually they're not working full-time yet. She worked with Ted Oh back in 2018. He, of course, is a former player who had a lot of great success as a youngster as well, so they kind of have that in common there. By my count, this is her seventh instructor that she's worked with on a full-time basis, so... You know, a lot of changes to Lydia's team over the years. And I know that there's changes coming up to her life, as we said, with getting married. And maybe that has something to do with the logistical part of it. But just given how much success she has had with Sean Foley, really surprising.
Are you concerned at all if you're a Lydia Ko fan watching and you see this coaching change, considering the turbulence that she had earlier in her career with making those coaching changes and caddy changes and club changes? Or has she arrived at a point in her career, in your mind, where she has ownership of her swing and her game?
Can I say both? I am concerned because I feel like, you know, it does raises a lot of questions, you know, considering that they seem to be such a good fit. But I'm really anxious to hear from her when we see her next week at the Pelican. Maybe she can flesh this out a little bit more for us to make us understand a little bit better. But, you know, look, Lydia is a very wise soul. And I think that what Sean Foley gave her and their time together will stay with her, obviously. And she said in her post, he will continue to be a great mentor and friend, and their relationship was very inspiring for her. So I do think she is a different person after having worked with Sean Foley over these 2 years. So going back to Ted O, she won't be the same person that she was when they first worked together in 2018 or heading into the 2018 season. So, you know, it's another good foundation. She's at a different point in her life, and she's just going to keep building from there. But it certainly does raise a lot of questions, because if you spend any time with Sean Foley, you know it's just as much about life and the big picture as it is about any kind of technicality.
Yeah.
And he helped her learn how to win again.
Absolutely. Coach and mentor and taught her really how to be an athlete again. How about the LPGA big picture in Japan this week? You look at the race to the CME Globe. How important could this week be for a handful of names?
Well, what's interesting is that we talk a lot about the top of the CME rankings and the Rolex rankings, but what's really interesting is what's going on around the 60 mark on that list. Because, you know, as you know, the LPGA used to use the money list to determine things, but now they use the CME Race to the Globe. And right at the number 60 mark, which is the magic number to qualify for the Tour Championship, is Daniela Darquea. And I just love this story because this was a player similar to Andrea Lee, who was playing on the Epson Tour at the start of the year, had lost her card. She makes her first, you know, quote unquote, big event start when she qualified for the US Women's Open in the middle of the year. And then she got invited to play in the Dow team event. And she parlayed a top 10 finish in the Dow team event into more starts on the LPGA, finished second at Cambia, and now, which is Portland. And now here she is on her way to potentially making her way into her first CME Group Tour Championship, where the winner gets $2 million.
Beth Ann, you have touched on it in various ways throughout the course of our discussion here today, but because the season is so close to coming to a close, I'm curious, how would you answer if I asked you how 2022 will be remembered on the LPGA Tour?
Well, I think when we zoom out and we look big picture at what happened this year, you know, I have to look at Muirfield, going to Muirfield for the first time, going to Mission Hills for the last time. Those are two big milestone moments on the LPGA. And the third being a $10 million purse at the U.S. Women's Open, another huge milestone. So I think when we look big picture, people are going to be talking about those three things for years to come. And then I think, if Lydia Ko were to finish off this season as player of the year, win the Vera Trophy, you're looking at the comeback Ko year. You know, that certainly would be a huge theme for the year. And then the rise of Ataya Titical. I mean, it's crazy when you look at how many great storylines are going on. You know, the fact that we have another teen on top of the world is such a fun thing.
Lots of storylines still ahead. I always feel smarter after we speak to Beth Ann Nichols. Have a great Monday. Happy Halloween. We'll speak to you soon.
Same to you.
All right. Got these last few events. You heard her say that you know, lots to think about when you think about the remaining, you know, events on the schedule. But when you look, I want to ask you the question you asked her. When you think about 2022 and the LPGA, what comes to mind? What will stand out for you?
I mean, my reaction would pretty much be the exact same as Beth Ann Nichols. When you have a purse at $10 million, when you had the AIG Women's Open at Muirfield, with the history of what took place at Muirfield to get to the point where we are right now, with the fact that we had the KPMG Women's PGA Championship at Congressional, which is great. So the venues are absolutely world-class for the best players in the world. And I also agree with her that the Lydia Ko story is a compelling one to me. So is Titicoon, to tell you the truth. But
sure,
for Lydia Ko, the sense that you could get a player who is absolutely destined to be in the World Golf Hall of Fame, the fact that her accomplishments seem to go back a few years despite the fact that she's still so young, I just think that's a really cool story, too. So that can Lydia Ko once again be the Lydia Ko that we used to know, even though the body has changed, the swing has obviously changed, the swing coaches have changed a number of times through it all. Can she ascend to the top of the game once more? And so all of those things are compelling for me. What about you?
For me, it's the loss, at least temporarily, of the rivalry that we thought would carry the LPGA Tour for the next 5 years, 10 years, and that's Jin Young Ko and Nelly Korda. You know, they combined for 10 wins if you include Nelly's Olympic gold medal a year ago, which I'm going to do, not an official LPGA win. But these two players have both battled injury. In Nelly's case, very serious injury with this blood clot. Just one win between these two players. If you had told me at the end of 2021 that this would be the output for them, I would say no way, Jose. A reminder for me and for others that just how difficult this game is, very hard to predict it. But these were two players who the floodgates were open for, and it was so compelling to watch them going head-to-head. I was very much looking forward to that in 2022. It just didn't materialize.
Yeah, that's a really good point, too. But I am forced to wonder, when you're talking about Nelly in particular, is because she lost time, right?
Sure, yeah.
And now that she's on the mend, do you think it sets up for a breakout year in 23?
I think the talent is otherworldly. Her height, long levers, hits the ball a long way. The family that she comes from, with a highly accomplished brother playing tennis, Sebi Korda, who I watched fall in a tough one to FAA a couple of weekends ago, not to mention her sister and her parents, a highly accomplished golf and tennis family. I think the way she handled success last year, and I got to spend some time with her at Baltusrol a year out from KPMG, she just carries that very, very well. She's athlete, jock, tough. I think she's going to be fine in 2023.
We'll see how it plays itself out, but we're not done yet talking about the best players on the LPGA. Two appearances for Team USA at the Solheim Cup. This is a multiple-time winner in the LPGA, and she'll be joining us right after break. We're talking about Austin Ernst. You do not want to miss this.
Back on Golf Today, let's flash back to March of 2021. Austin Ernst won her third LPGA Tour event, the LPGA Drive-On Championship at Golden Ocala. Prior to final round, 70 for a whopping five-shot win over Jennifer Kupcho. Golden Ocala has some cool, like, tribute holes. I love the golf course if you're in the Orlando area, kind of north of town. Here's Austin's career accomplishments, three LPGA wins, twice a member of the Solheim Cup team for the U.S., NCAA Division I women's individual champ at LSU. She's a Taiga. And, of course, on that U.S. Curtis Cup team back in 2012. What's not listed on the board, you can catch Austin in the newest episode of Golf Channel Academy presented by PXG. This is very cool. It premieres tomorrow, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, right here on Golf Channel. It's hosted by my partner in crime, Matt Adams, and I believe we have Austin Ernst with us right now. It's great to see you. Looking forward to tomorrow night, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. What was it like working with this guy, Austin?
Yeah, it was great. Matt's a pro, so he makes it easy.
No doubt. You focused on wedge play. How important are the wedges in your bag for you in terms of scoring?
Yeah, I think for me, that's kind of where I make up a lot of shots. I kind of looked really hard at my game in 2017, said, hey, what do I need to improve? And it was par five scoring with wedges in my hands and par fours. So I really kind of made that a focus for 2018, and I feel like my game has just really, really progressed tremendously since I really started honing in my wedges and my short game.
Austin, it really wasn't that long ago that you and I were out in the desert recording that show, and at the time, you were just coming back, and I wonder how many people realize how injured you were, the severity of that injury, and what amount of time it took you to come back, working on the short game when you could as you went along. Could you share that aspect of your life with the world?
Yeah, I've had a neck injury. I won't really get into the details of it, but it was a long recovery. I was lucky I didn't have to have surgery, but I did have to step away from playing in April. I still haven't played on tour yet, but I am back playing at home, and I'm just really getting back into trying to play 5-6 days in a row and get back into tournament golf. But yeah, I had, I think, 2 months where I couldn't really touch a club. I couldn't even putt. And then I kind of slowly got back into putting, into chipping, and into half swings. And My short game's been really good because that's kind of all I've been able to do. And after being away for so long, I really got the itch to want to get out and practice and play as much as I possibly could.
Glad to hear you're healthy. I've always considered you one of the ballers out there on the LPGA Tour. Very, very tough player. But I'm curious, in doing a Golf Channel Academy and you're having to explain how you go about your business, some players don't really know how they do what they do. What was it like trying to explain your process to the viewers?
Yeah, I kind of try to think about it beforehand, because sometimes when I'm playing with friends or my husband, I'm trying to explain something, I really have to kind of hit a shot to explain it. I think growing up with my dad as a club pro, though, really helped me just kind of know what I do to try to get better. But there were a few things that I definitely had to step back and think, okay, I kind of just naturally walk up and hit the shot. Sometimes I naturally kind of, if I want to hit a high one, I think, oh, I want to hit it high, and I put my hands a little back. But, you know, what are the other things that I do? Which, thinking about that, kind of helped me really hone in on, okay, what are the three things, or what's the process that I go through when I'm stepping up to a shot and visualizing one.
What's great about tomorrow's show, folks, which will premiere at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time, is that Austin goes through step by step. So here she is telling you, yeah, I had to think about it, but her ability to deliver the message of how to do it was so well done that I guarantee you that people at home will learn something about using these wedges. And I want to ask you, that when you're talking about hitting your wedge, talking about your approach, why for you is it so important for you to be able to control your trajectory and to be able to control your spin? And again, for the people at home, how can they benefit from learning to do the same?
Yeah, I think anytime you play in wind, and then that's trajectory 101, and then spin as well. You know, both those things determine kind of how much the wind's going to affect it. If you have a tucked pin, or if you have soft greens or firm greens, then you have to approach the shot a little bit different. So we touched on all of that, where, you know, we kind of went through scenarios of, okay, it's a back pin. I need to hit this one a little lower. What do I do? What's my thought process? And then we did something at the end where I hit three different clubs and they all went the same distance. But that's kind of where you get into really visualizing shots and having fun with the game. I think that's where you can have so much fun on the range practicing, especially short game and wedge shots, because you can do so many different things and hit the same shot but different ways.
Are you a believer in the aim small, miss small philosophy? Instead of maybe looking at the entire green or, you know, the fairway, you're looking at a leaf, you know, 250 yards down there. You're looking at a blemish on the green where you want to land your golf ball. How much is that a part of your, you know, philosophy in playing this sometimes difficult game?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, wedge shots, I'm aiming at the pin, or, you know, I'm picking something very close to the pin. Chipping, though, I do that constantly. We touched on that, where if I don't have a mark that I can go to, I'll place a mark down. So I'll place a coin or some kind of ball marker down that I'm trying to land the ball and then get it to react. Which I think that's kind of helped me the most with visualizing chip shots and pitch shots and really focusing in on the one spot where I want to hit it. And then I can kind of go from there and check off multiple things. If I hit my spot, well, maybe I didn't hit the right shot, or maybe I don't have the right spot. So you can kind of check off a lot of different things when you're practicing chipping by picking a spot and making it something that you pay attention to.
Austin, this Golf Channel Academy is presented by PXG tomorrow night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Could you talk about your relationship with PXG and what it is about their clubs you like so much?
Yeah, I mean, I really have had a great relationship with PXG. I signed with them the year after they became a company. So I was a little bit late to the party, but I actually put their irons in play that first year. And they've been great for my game. I've gotten two wins on tour with PXG. The wedges that they have now, the Sugar Daddy 2s, I put those in play pretty much immediately. And the great thing about PXG, I think, is just their ability to work with us and really kind of give us what's best for us, and just really kind of care about us, where, you know, they'll spend that extra time with you. If you're not happy with something, then they'll they'll do everything they can to make it good for you. And Bob's just been great for golf in general, but really the LPGA Tour. I think PXG now has probably more players on staff than any other club company. And we can just really feel the love from PXG and from Mr. Parsons.
Awesome stuff. Great job, by the way. Very much looking forward to you seeing it tomorrow night.
Thank you.
And we're back on Golf Today. Chris Como has dedicated his life to coaching golfers of all levels to achieve their goals. He's worked with top players on each professional tour, most notably Tiger Woods from 2014 to 2017. You can watch his new show exclusively on Golf Pass. Here's a sneak peek.
Hey, Golf Pass, Chris Como here. You guys sent in so many great questions, long games, some wedges. We're going to touch on a lot of things that will be very helpful. And it's great to be able to connect to so many people out there, really get a sense where people are struggling in the game. Okay, so this is going to typically be a better player question. Most people don't fire the hips too fast. Tiger Woods fired his hips incredibly fast. I still got to get that watch to be pointed at the target. You ask the questions, and I'm going to answer. Let's get started.
Pleased to be joined now by Chris Como, the host of the Ask Como series on Golf Pass. It's good to see you. In this series, you answer the questions of Golf Pass members who are very much in need of your help. What does it mean to be able to connect with amateur golfers all over the country and give them advice to help their games?
It's a lot of fun. I mean, one of the things I love about this game is just how it can be an incredible vehicle for people to enjoy life better, just all the different things that come out of it. So, I spent a lot of time on tour. I still have my clients that are recreational golfers, but to have an opportunity to hit so many people and hopefully help their game in one series is it's an awesome opportunity.
Yeah, let's go down that road again and kind of connecting the dots between working with some of the top professionals in the game and also working with amateur golfers of all skill levels, as well as the most, I guess the thing that would be interest me is what is the most noticeable difference when you're teaching, say, an amateur than when you're teaching the best player in the world?
I mean, one of it is just the reality of the time that they can commit to the game, right? I mean, professional golfers, their whole life is dedicated to playing as best as they can. That's just not the reality for a lot of us. I mean, myself included, I'm busy with work. So to help my own game, it's got to be a little bit more sort of, it's just a different strategy. And there's also the constraints of what your body can do when you're not working out every day necessarily, or you have injuries that haven't been fully rehabbed or whatever it is. So I think it's just understanding the realistic constraints that a recreational golfer oftentimes has. And then how do you build strategies to help them with their game, given those sort of real life constraints that exist?
What question do you get the most from amateurs in need of help? Are they looking for a quick fix? Are they looking for a magic potion? What question is like top of their mind for the most part?
I hear a lot, I want to be more consistent, which it's funny because it sounds so sort of simple and whatever, but if you think about it, it's sort of like the billion dollar question in golf, right? I mean, there's an 18 handicapper somewhere in the world today that's going to make a hole in one, yet on the next hole, they might hit it out of bounds or whatever. That's why they're an 18 handicapper. So where does that level of consistency come from? I mean, that's kind of sort of the mystery of this game. So it's one of those questions you get a lot that I don't think necessarily has a simple answer, but it's almost like people expect, hey, why can't I hit that great shot over and over again? And it's like, well, if you could, you'd be out on the PGA Tour. And even PGA Tour players are asking that same question. So it is kind of one of the great mysteries of the game.
All right, Chris, but there are a lot of people watching you around the world right now, and they're seeking that one piece of advice to improve. I'm curious what that one piece of advice would be if I said to you, just give us one, what would it be?
This is not the question. I mean, one, find yourself a great coach. I mean, I think having that partnership where you have someone else who's super interested in your game and improving your game, there's nothing better you can do than finding yourself a great coach. Other than that, this is in part having a coach to help with this. You just got to understand your swing a little bit better. Everybody's got their tendencies. And if you can better understand exactly what your tendencies are and then what are some sort of simple things to kind of keep you in your own sweet spot, that's the best thing you can do day to day. I mean, it's hard for me to give something like a generic swing tip, because if you're a slicer, it'd be one thing. If you're, overdraw the ball or hook the ball, it'd be a different thing. So I don't want to give sort of a, a generic swing tip. It's more of just find yourself a good person to help you better understand your own golf swing.
Fair enough.
Love that. Maybe a PGA professional in your neighborhood. So you do work with amateurs. You also work with some of the best players in the world, including Bryson DeChambeau. I'm just curious, Chris, where is he physically and emotionally? Because a year ago, it seemed like we talked about Bryson every single week.
Yeah, he's doing great. You know, I had surgery earlier this year on his hand. He's recovering beautifully from that. He came in second in the Long Drive Championship, which is, I mean, think about that. He came in second in the World Long Drive Championship earlier this year. That's crazy. So he's had a wild year. He's getting healthy. He's pretty much 100% healthy. His game is really trending. So, you know, early this year, he had a couple of little, you know, hiccups with his hand. But it's trending really nicely.
All right, so because it is Halloween, to put a fun twist on things, what do you think, Chris, is the scariest shot in golf?
The scariest shot in golf? Well, it's not really a shot, but if some, I actually, this is funny, because I just had a student, a recreational golfer, who went through the bouts of having the shanks. And there's, I mean, it just gives you the heebie-jeebies, right, just thinking about it. And it was wild because he would shank it. He went through a stretch where he shanked it over and over and over again. And I've seen this happen where people get in this funk of just shanking it. But the crazy part is that it was a shank over and over and over again. So it's like, look, going back to the consistency, it's like you're being very consistent. You're hitting... You're hitting it off the same spot every time. It's just the wrong part of the club, right? I mean, you could have someone make a perfect golf swing, but if they're a foot away from the ball, it'd be a whiff. So really what it was a miscalibration of where he was sort of hitting the face. His brain had just sort of miscalibrated. So we had to do some stuff to reset it to get him to hit on the right part of the face. And kind of even going back to like, what is a quick tip for people? If you can just sort of pay attention to where you're hitting it on the face, that's such a big part of what makes the ball do what it does. So whether that be taking some, I don't know if you've ever seen people spray like foot spray on a face or put tape on a face, but just really kind of paying attention to where you make contact on the face. One, going back to your earlier question, I think is a great tip for most people. And then two, it's like, if you're hitting a certain part of the face over and over again, it's not necessarily some sort of magic, oh, you got to change this, because you're being consistent. It's just consistently in the wrong place. So there's sometimes you have to do a little bit of a reset or a recalibration to hitting it on, you know, the part of the face that you do want to hit it on.
But isn't the shank the miss of the good player?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes.
Okay.
It's also it can also be the miss of a bad swing. So yeah, sure.
I mean, that's
the cliche out there, but yeah, that's sometimes true.
Ask Como. It is exclusively on Golf Pass. Chris, thank you for your time. Thanks for joining us. We wish you the very best with the new series.
Thank you, guys.